Yeah, I understand that. How accurate is bone marrow aspirations and flow cytometries? Is there an error factor, or, you know, is there some leeway there? For example, you know, if you on the IPSS scoring system, you know, if you're 9%, you know, in your one category, if you're 10%, you're in another category, you know. Is we've often wondered about the is there an error factor there, or is there an error rate with bone marrow aspirations? And I know how flow cytometry works, but I don't know. I mean, I just wonder how accurate it is.
Big amount of subjectivity if you have a good hematopathologist that's reading the bone marrow, but you know it can be certainly a few percent. I would say it's not the difference between 5% and 20%, but it might be the difference between 4% and 6%. That puts you in a really different category. In terms of the blast percentage, which I think is what you're getting at, it can be, you know, there can be a little bit of error. In terms of the chromosomes, no.
Yeah,
we're
normal there. We don't have any chromosomal abnormalities, so that's good, I assume.
Yes.
Let me ask one other question. I don't want to.
one more. Just one more.
Promise. Is that okay? You know, MDS to me is a disease of gene silencing, and we have the methyltransferase inhibitors. There's another form of gene silencing, you know, with the deacetylase inhibitors. Is there any good research going on there that you're aware of that might, you know, lead to something in the future that might help us?
Versus gene expression profile for an individual gene. And so for many years, it's been a logical question to ask, could we combine a DNA methyltransferase inhibitor with a histodeacetylase inhibitor and get a synergistic effect in terms of getting where we want to go? And so there have actually been a large number of studies with a variety of different histodeacetylase inhibitors in combination with decitabine and azacitabine. And what I take away from those studies, in essence, is that while it's a great idea and while you can do it, it's never been demonstrated that you actually improve the response above and beyond what you get with the DNA methyltransferase inhibitor alone. And so while in theory it's a great idea, that's not. And people keep trying over and over to do it. I mean, and we say, well, this isn't really a very good drug. Let's try this other one. But we've never really demonstrated that combination is uniquely effective. I think of the combinations that have emerged in terms of no drugs, probably the nicest data are with the combination of azacitabine or decitabine and Revlimid. And that combination actually does seem to have a better response rate than azacitabine and decitabine alone. It remains to be seen what the long-term effects would be, but that does seem a promising combination, and not one that I would have intuitively expected would be synergistic, and certainly not one I would have expected to be very well tolerated from a hematological.
It's So we should feel comfortable in saying to our oncologist, you know, hey, we're going to take a vacation, you know, and our numbers look good. Can we wait a week for, you know, a... Yeah, I get that we don't want to stop. I understand that. Yeah.
Yes.
So what we need to do is after we're done
reach out to Deborah. Tell her that you want a copy of Dr. Langston's slide deck. She will email it to you, forward it to you, whichever way you want it, and she will get it to you so that you have your hand on it. And if you, again, have follow-up questions for her or myself after we're done, please feel free to reach out. I'm accessible by email, phone, whatever way you want to. I've had many patients call me, actually, afterwards. I had one nurse reach out to me 2 months after I did the presentation, and that, out of the blue question for me. So, again, we're all available. How about 5 minutes, stretch, real quick, before we start, or are you okay for another round? Keep going. Thank you, Dr. Langston. You're great,
Dad. Information everybody.
I know. That's what I hear that a lot, because again, MDS is so complicated. We did not have MDS as a diagnosis 25, 10 years ago. This did not exist. This only came about because a group of physicians saw this as a recurrent issue, really from patients' charts, patients' diagnosis, or just the blood counts. And they combined all of this information and said, there's a problem here. Nobody's addressing this problem. Why? And they needed to get together, they got together, came up with a plan, and started working on it to redefine it again and again. And we're still in development. We're still learning. The reasons are the people that raise their hands, the patients, because you guys are unique in that sense. Every patient is unique. And so we want to get that uniqueness and information off of you or learn from you so that we can target the therapy better. And similar to with the diagnosis of CML, we want to target it to each unique MDS patient so that we can say, John, you have this type of MDS. We think that this drug is going to work the best for you. Why? Because we learn from patients like yourself who have this type of DNA or mutation. This is the drug for you. Why? Because like CML, we can block it. We can prevent it from progressing. That's our goal. That's our goal in MDS. We're going to get there. One of these days. All right, so we have, you guys have gotten a fabulous book, which I mentioned earlier. The information I'm about to present, again, feel free not to feel like, oh my God, I have to get this down on a piece of paper. She's turning this slide deck too fast. All of it is in here. All of it, plus a lot more. And it will give you information from Iron Overload. It will tell you about what a clinical trial is, the different phases of a clinical trial, if people are enrolled in it, if they're thinking about it in the future, or if they get exposed to it. Meaning your oncologist starts talking to you and saying, well, we have a clinical phase 2 trial available for you, and I think you may be eligible. And you're looking at them and you're like, what is phase 2? What does that mean? It's in here. That information is in here. And you can read it at your leisure and get that info. So again, feel free not to write down everything that I'm presenting. Just capture the main message to take home and learn from and think about it in the future. Okay. So Sandra Curtin, she developed this fabulous slide deck for you guys, this patient and caregivers, because she is from Phoenix, Arizona. She lives in the Southwest, and she is part of this area where she associates everything to her. So she color coordinated everything to different colors of, the patient, the red blood cell count, to the earth tone colors in Arizona that you see. So take a peek at this. It's beautifully written, the different colors and the message. And for you, it's just This is our National Nurse Leadership Board, the reading people that are including. So it's a whole bunch of nurses and physicians and stuff. We are, I'm part of this Nurse Leadership Board, hence this is my volunteerism in teaching patients and caregivers about MDS, so we are part of this organization because we want to, again, educate, be available to you as patients and caregivers for any information that we may be able to share with you to learn about it, because MDS is not easy. It is so not easy because it's so complicated, as I just have not mentioned it already. Complicated because, again, every MDS patient is unique, and it's complicated to learn and figure out which category do I fall into, because there's so many categories. And as well, young women over here mentioned, oh, you know, my dad or somebody has potentially lung cancer and the MDS. Oh my goodness. It's not just one thing that you're dealing with. You're dealing with two things to try to figure out. Where does my dad fall into the category? It's like, we all know, because it's not mentioned here. So this is the slide deck to go over a few things. Understanding the diagnosis, the treatment options. It's a little bit repetitious in regards to what Dr. Langston just presented, but bear with me. I will try to concise it and make it simpler so you may be able to understand it a little bit differently. What are the purpose of the treatments? Why are we proposing or have you learned about it? Why is it so important to know about what is happening to you when you take the medicine? What are the side effects? And hence, your caregivers that are here today, what can they do? That's what they're here. They want to support you as patients so that you have this great quality of life. You pursue a cure therapy potentially. And at the end of the day, we want to stay healthy. And we want to fulfill all our things that are the goals of life, of just living, enjoying together, gardening, all of the fun activities that you guys do. So tools and strategies for success, again, understanding the disease is really key. If you get the gist of what MDS is, you can understand and relate to the unique patient that is here today. And in retrospect, as Dr. Langston said, it's a sick problem in the bone marrow. Basically, if you think about it, I like associating everything to food, because I love food. So I think of, when I think of food or MDS, I think of a garden. So garden is basically your bone marrow. You're planting seeds. The seeds represent your red blood cell count, white blood cell count, and your platelets. Think of those seeds, they're very important. Now, when you open that packet and you pour those seeds, not all seeds are the same. They look different. They all have a different purpose. Some grow tomatoes, some grow cucumbers. I love my jalapenos. Different kinds of peppers. So they all have a purpose. But not all seeds are perfect. Some are broken. Broken because they don't grow to their potential. Some grow baby jalapenos, some grow the beautiful, big, luscious, spicy jalapenos, depending on, again, the type of the seed. Our purpose is to understand, basically, there are broken seeds in the bone marrow, in the garden. They're not growing to their fruition as we would like it to. And with that being said, basically, there is a malignancy component with it because something happened for those seeds to be broken. We're not sure why. We don't know if Hodgkin's treatment that she received, the chemotherapy, did something to her bone marrow and said, let me turn it around and just create this abnormal seed to create the MDS. We don't know if the lung cancer, something triggered in the bone marrow and said, let me create this bad immune problem within, the body to create the MDS, the mutation in the bone marrow, in the garden. That makes sense? Yes? So basically, again, every person is different. There is a clonal abnormality development in the bone marrow creating the progression or development of MDS. And it's a clonal stem cell issue. And it can happen with the red blood cell, it can happen with the white blood cell, or it can happen with the platelets, or all three. Every person's different. That's really the key message. This plastic, which is what I just mentioned, that seed is not perfect. It looks a little funny. It looks a little abnormal. Hence, it's not growing to its fruition. It's a nice chart because it gives you a perspective. This is basically your bone marrow, which is right here. The main bone marrow is right here in your head. Hence, that's why your physicians, oncologists, took a little sample. They collected the liquid part. They also may have collected a little bone chip. They may also have collected additional blood work from your arm. The key part of collecting a bone marrow sample are three things. One, you want to check your percentage of blasts, how many abnormal leukemic-type blood cells are there, the stem cells. You want to look at your DNA. The DNA, it takes about 7 to 14 days for it to grow. We send it off, that liquid part, we send it off to a special lab. They have to grow that bone marrow into a culture and figure out if that DNA is mutated, is there something going on, what chromosome abnormality does the patient have. Those results, they're not like snapping a finger like a CDC, but you guys get when you go to the doctor's office, it takes a while for those results to come through. The third part, besides the blast, besides the cytogenetics, is looking at the actual bone chip. If your doctor collected the bone chip, there was a question about that earlier, about myelofibrosis. You guys asked the question. We're looking for any scarring in the bone chip if your doctor collected it. Okay? We're looking for scarring because, again, going back to my garden, I'm planting my seeds. What happens in between when the plants start growing? The weeds. I think of the weeds as scarring. It's not allowing my plants, my tomatoes, and my cucumbers to grow. Does that make sense? Scarring to the weeds. It's a nice analogy. That's what's happening to the bone marrow if there's a problem. So a person can actually have a little scarring development in the bone marrow, plus have an MDS component, or one, or the other. So we're looking for that information. That information is collected off of a bone chip. We're also looking for iron stores. Does your body, do your seeds, have enough iron stores for you guys to make enough iron? Some patients do, some patients don't. Patients who have RARS subtype MDS, they may have extra iron or in their bone marrow because it's an overdrive. Some patients may not. So the RA subtype, it's variable. Okay, again, every patient's different. So that's what we're looking for in this information. This hematopoietic stem cell, that's your seed. That's in the liquid part. That's where we're made from, right here. Again, we get this information from 23 chromosomes from mom, 23 from dad. Okay? together. Hence, that hematopoietic stem cell is the mother's gene. It tells a message, and it's already pre-programmed to say, today I feel like making red blood cells. Today I'm going to be a white blood cell. Today I'm going to be platelets. And it's continuously doing this message or making these cells in your bone marrow. Right now, as you're sitting, it's making these because it's already pre-programmed. But unfortunately for patients who have MDS, that message is a little bit skewed because intrinsic or extrinsic factors come into place. And those can be related to previous chemotherapy, previous radiation therapy, previous environmental factors, previous hereditary problems, unfortunately, that the patient may have had, or family, you know, going down the family line? No. Those are the intrinsic or extrinsic factors that create a problem within the stem cell, creating the peripheral cytopenias. Peripheral cytopenias are the message that we get when we need to read a CBC, that you guys read and say, today my count is perfect, but the hemoglobin is not normal, and the platelets are not normal. That's the message. Okay? This is the workup involved for a MDS patient. And you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, you gotta go to a special school for this. They do. It takes a really keen oncologist to know all of these tests that need to be done for a patient who has a diagnosis of MDS. You can get a patient in your office, which you've gotten several. I'll never forget it. A 43-year-old woman coming through with your perspective, the hemoglobin of 5.5. Otherwise healthy. White blood cell count, perfect. It was 7.5. I mean, it was just perfect white blood cell count. Hemoglobin 5.5. She said, Jayshree, I just had this hemoglobin drop. I felt really like tired, low energy. And I went to my general doctor, primary care doctor, and they did a blood count. They freaked out. They thought I had leukemia. Her platelets were 330,000. Just give you a perspective. It's just the hemoglobin that you're dealing with, right? That's the only abnormal. The white blood cell count needs to be between 4 and 10.
Right.
Her white count was 7.5. It was perfect. It was, you know, right in the middle. Hemoglobin was really low. Extra energy. Platelets need to be anything about 150 to 400. And it was 330. It was perfect. I'm like, she had MDS and she had leukemia? What's going on? When we did her peripheral smear, we didn't see any leukemias under the microscope. We didn't see any leukemia cells floating around. We were really perplexed with this case. We're trying to figure out what is going on. Young enough, healthy enough, no comorbidities, meaning no diabetes, no high blood pressure, no cardiac problems, no thyroid problems. When we did the workup, besides the bone marrow, we just said, you know what, let's just wait on this. Let's just try some special blood tests. We did the blood tests right here, all of these. Actually, we didn't do that on the testosterone on her. We did all of this except for testosterone. We didn't do that part. And we found out 3 days later that she was vitamin B12 deficient. We just saved her a transplant. We just saved her a bone marrow biopsy. Again, every patient is different. You've got to have a really good MDS physician, oncologist, somebody that is keen and is taking care of an MDS patient, because it's a real special group. What I'm trying to say is that every patient does not have MDS or leukemia. You've got to make sure that you don't want to hurt them. You don't want to do invasive testing if it's not, you know, necessary. But that was a bizarre case, and again, if that patient didn't come through my doorstep, through our office, I would have learned to share that case with you to let you know that mistakes can happen along the way. We were planning on transplant, we were thinking, oh my God, we have to get her brother and sister in, she's so young, but then we're like, this is wait. Again, to be a circle of facts. This is a nice classification system that, again, very business-wide, with a lot of information. Lots of different categories. Again, going from RA to, again, going out to the CML, similar to what Dr. Langston presented. What is the classification? How do they classify? Is it MDS or is it AML? It's complicated. Again, this gentleman may be RARS. This gentleman may be RA. Different treatment plans, different responses, different mutations, different chromosome mutations. A lot of things that play into it. Again, scoring system is important. With any patient that's diagnosed with MDS, the you have to do a scoring system. Why? Because then, at least you can identify what the prognostic features of the patients are. What are the expectations? The patient has low-risk disease of MDS. That patient's going to live for another 8 to 15 years before they progress or something else happens. Why would you not help them prevent myopic overload? Why would you not prevent other comorbidity issues, right, along the way? Because their survival is going to be a lot longer, different than a patient that has intermediate or high risk. This is a nice slide just to give you perspective of different cytogenetic abnormalities. Again, looking your cytogenetic report is very important. That's part of the package, part of the workup. So when you go back to your home or your office, or your oncology office, and you don't have a copy of your cytogenetic report, ask them for that. Why? Because you need to identify which category does your mom, your dad, your wife, husband, what do they have? Where do they fall into? Because it will give you clues. It will help you understand where you stand, besides your oncologist explaining that to you. Again, risk factors. Once you combine all of that information, again, looking at the hemoglobin, the platelets, the ANC, which is a new revised version. Again, this is all new. They're still going through a metamorphosis. Still figuring out what can we do to better figure out the survival information. Because you know what? People are interested in knowing that info. They may want to make plans, you know, for their family, for themselves. They want to know. Again, you want to identify that information and try to figure out which category do they fall into. Is it going to be a low risk, intermediate, or high risk? Which category do they fall into? Survival and the risk of leukemia transformation, a lot of people are concerned about that. You know, they may ask the question, Jay, you know, I have, you know, scoring of 3, intermediate. Mean overall survival is saying about 3 years. Median does not mean that every patient that has that will end up with just 3 years. Some may fall over, some may fall under. It's variable. And the risk of AML in 25% of the patients, again, this another perspective giving you, and this was all of this data that was collected, was combined for over 2,000 patients. So this is not a small group of patients that had MDS. This was a big multinational study that they looked at, going through all the charts and information, trying to figure out what is critical to identify, what will make that number change, and again, looking at comorbidities, platelets, hemoglobin, we never looked at all of that. That was added on to the revised version of the scoring system before. The facts about MDS, again, average age is 73. That does not mean, I know the woman over there, you know, it doesn't fall into that category. She's different. She unfortunately has a secondary. Okay, so she's different. She's an outlier in that category. But that's the median age. MDS remains incurable, malignancy, but there is a curable process. And again, Dr. Langston presented some data about patients who may be eligible for a mini transplant versus going through the whole allogeneic transplant, different conditioning regimens. Going through a transplant, different options available. I think the key point for you as a patient and caregiver, the message is identifying the oncologist that takes care of a lot of MDS patients and is familiar with the disease, knowing the outcomes of what it takes to, you know, take care of that type of patient with that type of disease, which is very critical. The leading cause of death is the disease itself. About 80%. So know that I've got many patient forums. So there was one person that asked, this was like a year and a half ago, one patient that asked, Jay, does MDS when you die, does it hurt? And I said, you know, that's a great question. And I have to leave the floor to, you know, have every person kind of think about that. But overall, for my MDS patients that I've taken care of, they don't. It's more of the other things that come about, such as the diabetes, the heart issues, that they may have iron overload. Those come about, or an infection, which is key. Those are the things that we monitor our patients very closely with, because we don't want to trigger that part creating opposite end impacts. Individualized treatment, again, as I mentioned earlier, every MDS patient is unique. And it's an individualized treatment plan. Hence, that's why this book that we gave you, folder, binder with all the information is because, again, you want to figure out which treatment plan would be best for you for this patient. Some patients may need transfusions. Ryan over here, he's told me he needs 3 transfusions every 4 weeks. That's his plan. That's what he needs. Some other patient may say, Jay, I only need 1 every 2 months. Again, individualized treatment. Not every treatment is applicable for another patient that has MDS. Individualized performance status is very, very important for morbidities. Identifying the risk category in the IPSS, is it primary MDS or secondary or tertiary? Lately, we've been seeing some patients that not only have just MDS, they've gotten prostate cancer 15 years ago, we got radiation, and they've been on hormone treatment, and then they developed some other skin cancer, and then developed MDS. Who knows what triggered what? Nobody knows. Kind of have to play it out and figure out, again, an individualized plan for that person. That genetic status is very important, and lifestyle, which we'll talk about. These are the treatment options that Dr. Lansman went through earlier. I'm going to skip through this. And again, this is a nice slide because these are the agents that are under investigation right now. This slide is important for people that are interested in enrolling into different clinical trials. Again, if you need a copy of the slide deck, we'd be happy to send it to you so you don't have to write it down. It's a very busy slide, but these are the agents right now we have available for patients who participate in phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 trials available. Key principles of therapies in MDS, again, transplant, not auto transplant, to make it very clear. Auto transplant is basically taking your own cells and reinfusing it later into your own body. That transplant they studied in MDS, and unfortunately it doesn't work. You basically need stem cells, again, talk about different seeds, right? Going back to my garden. Taking stem cells from him, the gentleman with the blue back there, and transplanting into the lady that's sitting right next to him, next to her. Him, sorry. going into her bone marrow and growing those seeds. Okay? So it can happen. That's an allogeneic transplant. Taking seeds from one person and transplanting into another. So how do you do all that? So if you guys are familiar with what a dialysis patient goes through, they basically have a catheter in their chest or their arm. Basically, if the patient sits, actually the donor sits in a chair, just to give you a perspective. It's a peripheral stem cell process that I'm explaining to you. The patient sits in a chair for about 6 hours, give or take. And what it does is they hook up the catheter in their chest and they drain the stem cells. And again, they're not drying you totally up as a donor. They use the cells of stem cells, and they collect the blood, and they filter out the necessary seeds. And they collect it in a bag, a transfusion bag. And they hold it. They process it. They test it. All the necessary stuff that's needed, they collect it in this one little bag. And at a later point, we reinfuse it, or we reinfuse it into the patient. At another time after the patient, it has been ablated, meaning to completely close out the bone marrow with no leukemic cells. Okay, you have to give that patient itself, that cells, a chose to just wipe out the bone marrow. And again, think of it basically as spring is coming, we're just planting our garden, we have to till it, right? Because we, you know, turn over the soil. We're killing, you know, turning the soil over to get rid of the weeds and all the other stuff in the back there. Turning around again, and then we're planting the new seeds. We're hoping we get the tomatoes, the cucumbers, and the peppers that we want. Okay? It's a waiting process. Again, for MDS, blood counts often get worse before they get better. That's one thing that I do mention to all my patients is I make it very clear to them and the caregivers. It's a slow process. It's not like solid tumor cancer where you actually have a measurement of, say, a lung cancer or a stomach cancer, something that's palpable that you can touch and say, that measures 5 centimeters by 5 centimeters. And after chemo, a couple cycles, you see that shrinking down to zero. With blood cancer, the only way we know of is by evaluating the CBC, repeating the bone marrow, doing a flow cytometry. Flow cytometry is also as part of the bone marrow package in figuring out where you fall into the category of the blast percentage. And it identifies if there's something abnormal besides MDS. Sometimes we pick up another cancer on occasion. So that's part of the package of bone marrow. So this is what explains to you, this slide explains why time is required with MDS. So patience is truly a virtue with MDS. Blood counts and it suppresses. Sorry, go backwards. And normal blood cells are crowded out, right, by abnormal cells, meaning weeds. Okay, and it's taking over. What we need to do is clean up those weeds. By adding a chemo agent, hypomethylating agent, an oral agent, something, okay, for the cells to clean out, to get those weeds out, and help it to regrow. Again, it's a process. It's a step process. It takes time. Early toxicities may be difficult and or discouraging for the patient. I've had many talks with my patients and caregivers that I explain. You need at least 4 to 6 cycles, guys. 4 to 6 months. You're going to have to run out the contract we develop when they first come in, and I'm going over the treatment plan with them. I say, be patient. The first couple months, you may be coming to see me at least twice a week. You and I are going to be very familiar with each other. Getting to know each other. Talk about what is happening to you, how tired you are, where is your threshold. You may be fine with a hemoglobin of 7.1. He may not. He may decompensate. He may need 2 units of blood, while you may need something waiting until thereafter, you know, dropping even further. So your threshold is different than him. Every patient is different. Again, you've got to base it on that. Treat the patient accordingly. Because I get that a lot. Jay, what is your threshold? Where is your cutoff? When do you treat the patients with platelets? When do you give transfusions? And I say, I don't base it on the number. I look at the patient. I ask them how they're feeling. When they first come in, I don't give them the CBC results because they're so anxious. They're so anxious. They're like, Jay, what's my result? And I say, well, I'm not going to give you the result. You tell me how your week was or 2 weeks that I haven't seen. You. Well, I have this and that, this and that. Then I tell them the number and they're like, oh, actually I'm good. So it's variable. It's variable. Key principles again. It takes time for it to work. This is just one way of explaining to you with MDS. It takes time to clear out those weeds. But just remember, you've got to keep cleaning up those weeds. Stop cleaning out, hence there's going to be an overgrown process in that garden of weeds. Hence, leukemia may tend to transform, or other things may come about thereafter. This is just a nice slide to explain to you that, you know, tri-lineage response, meaning all the three entities, the white blood cell hemoglobin platelets. It acts on the azacitidine, which is Vidaza. You guys may be familiar with that name, possibly, instead of azacitidine. The effects are impactful in the beginning in regards to the blood counts, and it takes a while for the blood to respond to clean out those leads. Transfusions are key in the beginning, because again, you may need that supportive help in the beginning, and people get freaked out. Jay, I never got a transfusion before, and why am I getting so many? I said, please be patient. It's going to take some time, because I got to support you. You come in with a little bit of six, and you're huffing and puffing. I'm not going to let you leave without a transfusion, unless you have religious, things, or that you can't get any transfusion. I got to come up with another plan to do that. But again, transfusions in the beginning are necessary to help the patient overcome. But once you hit that barrier and you start responding, hopefully, then you won't need as many. And then you will keep that maintenance, hopefully, for a lifelong and for maintaining your quality of life. So what can you do? This is the most important slide. I love this because it gives you some clues. Balanced diet. Really important. If you guys don't have an association with a big medical center like Emory, some other place maybe nearby, maybe Moffitt, some other big university setting, we have dietitians there. And because you may go to a local oncologist and you say, I don't have that, Jay, I don't know where you're coming from. I'm lucky because I have all of that. I have a dietitian, a nutritionist that works with me with my patients. I have a social worker that works with my patients. You're saying, well, I don't have that. Pick up the yellow pages. They still have them. Open up the book. Call up a big university and say, I have a patient that has MDX. I need help with the dietary help. And you know what? They will be happy to refer you or give you some advice. Free. Reach out. Information is key. Resources are available. Sometimes people feel short cheap because they go to a small little oncology office, even though they're pretty well taken care of. But they may not have enough support. Reach out. I know you have lots of support. Daily activities. At least once a day, if not more. Exercise is something. Whether it be walking, yoga, tai chi, something motivational. Surround yourself with positive energy. Young people, surround yourself with young people. And I talk about little kitties. I tell you, it's great energy because they will keep you moving. Whether you're not able to catch them or keep up with them, they will keep you moving. Avoid infection. Doesn't mean you stay in a bubble. It's
perfect. Avoid infection for clinical kids. There's no they aren't. We're talking about keeping those away, having to wear masks in public, but we aren't children.
So while you're getting treatment, conscious, common sense stuff. You're not going to be kissing and hugging them. Just remember, surround yourself with positive energy. You can still be around them. Just again, common sense. Keep the little, hand gel handy. You're not going to, infect yourself with the little kids being around you. If they have a runny nose and they're sick, obviously you can't play with them. Common sense stuff. You can still hang out with them. Do not put yourself in a bubble because then it's a trigger effect with depression. Okay? Do not do that. I encourage my patients, if they're getting treatment, go out. Enjoy some of the spring weather. Again, pollen I can't control. But again, surround yourself. Go out. Sun is good. I encourage that. Infection. There was a big question about the ANC of when to go, when to treat it, when not to treat it. Again, I think the key part for you guys to do is keep a digital thermometer handy, number one. That's very important. Know your signs and symptoms, meaning know your body. You know when you have a fever. You know when you're not feeling well, when you're coughing. If that color of your sputum is turning from clear to green, that's a problem. That's when you call the doctor. There's great, quick tips in this binder. Okay? Quick tips of knowing when to treat an infection, when to follow it, when to call your doctor. a lot of people that are like, I'm sure, what should I do? What should I do? Should I eat lettuce or no lettuce? You know, those kinds of simple questions, which are important because those are the questions that are coming about from you, that you shared with us and you wrote it down and say, you can eat lettuce. Make sure you wash it. That's easy. Great questions in that binder. Take a peek at it later. Avoid bleeding. Use a soft toothbrush. Okay? Don't get that hard toothbrush. Get a soft one. Good dental hygiene is important. Let your oncologist know when you go for your dental cleaning. Why? Because if you have a catheter, if you have some kind of other, you know, heart valve issue or whatever, you may need an antibiotic before you go. Let us know what's happening with the other physicians that you see. We only started taking care of you as an MDS patient recently. Think about that way. Somebody else is taking care of you for the last 60 years, 70 years, right? We don't know you yet. We're just getting to know you. So make sure you let us know, oh, I have a cardiologist appointment coming up next week. I just wanted to let you know. We're just doing an EKG, just a general workup. Oh, I'm here for my colonoscopy. Well, if your platelet count is 20,000 or 30,000, I'm not going to let you go do a colonoscopy. God forbid you get perforation, right? I got to pick up that phone and communicate with that GI doctor and say, please hold out. Why? Because you're not my patient. She's mine. She's my patient. I don't want you to hurt her. Hold off because, again, you got to weigh the pros and cons. Am I ruling out colon cancer? Well, then again, I got to figure out, do I need to give her platelets and then do the colonoscopy? It's a balancing game. But again, communicate because you not only see that oncologist, you may see other physicians. And the medicines that you guys get prescribed besides us giving you medicines, let us know. Drug-to-drug interactions, huge problem because you guys are not just taking your multivitamins and stuff, you're taking other stuff. And I want to make sure you guys are safe. I may not have all the answers, okay, with drug-to-drug, but I have the resources that I can look it up.
How can we get better communication when we're hospitalized or something? Because all we hear is I don't know and I haven't heard back.
Regarding
it seems like there's not a good communication between the infectious disease doctor and the hematologist and the oncologist.
So I think for that issue that you're mentioning, I think it's good to have an open heart-to-heart conversation with your oncologist and say, I need for you to be my quarterback. A quarterback's job is to figure out where I'm going to throw the ball. Have it open front to heart, and then there will be no miscommunication, and say, you're going to be my quarterback, I need for you to be that. Communicate with an IV doctor, with a pulmonologist, with the GI doctor, and an internal medicine doctor, and say, please help me out because I need to regroup. I don't want to chase five doctors.
And that's what we've been doing.
Right.
Look, I need you to talk with this doctor, and get back to us, and I just get to be able to help.
Sometimes I ask for a second opinion if I feel like I've reached my maximum. And it's okay to ask for a second opinion. I never get offended. Why? Because I know what I'm doing. But sometimes the other people may not. They may need help. So we may not have the answers, but we may need to reach out to another physician to say, you know what? I can't answer that young
person's
question, but I know where to reach out to. Are we reaching our 12 o'clock?
We're past it.
Oh!
And I just want to let everyone know, we're going to do it's a short evaluation at the end. Very short, but I'll give it to you like 15 minutes before shoot. I'll pass it to everybody, and then you can just, because it's just really simple. And did everyone see the questionnaire?
Yes, I told them about that, and they're going to fill that part out, and they get time in between. Let's have lunch, and we will finish up with this, and then the rest of the time, I have you guys ask the questions, and I will try my best to answer them, and we will work with you guys to figure out a plan if there needs to be one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Also, everyone,
just so you know, there's also snack food down in the hallway. So make sure you grab a lot of it. A lot. Have her introduce herself and what she does, but she's a big part of the team and in regards to her company and what she does for MDS patients, multiple myeloma patients, different cancer patients. So go ahead, Michael.
Thank you. Diplomat does think that it is important to attend events like this. Obviously, we're part of that care unit for you. Oh, you can't hear me? Sorry about that. So anyways, we're proud supporters of the MDS Foundation. Diplomat does dispense a lot of the specialty drugs. For instance, like Revlimid, and some of you may be on it. The reason why it has to go through a specialty pharmacy is because there's a lot involved in order to access it. It's not like getting an antibiotic where it's a $20 copay and goes out the door. With Revlimid, it tends to be a little bit more expensive, and it has to go through approval through your insurance company. And Diplomat works with your providers to get access to the medication. In addition, a lot of times patients fall into donut hole if you're on Medicare. I'm not quite sure who's on Revlimid right now. But Diplomat can find funding assistance for you. So access to the medication should never be a problem because there's always some form of some forms of assistance for patients to access a drug. Again, through either foundations or even the manufacturers have programs. So if you have high copays, you should really reach out to your pharmacy and find out if there is other forms of assistance because it's there. We do care packing too, just so you know, because some of you who do get it from specialty pharmacies, your recommend they eat in a form like this. And as Jay had mentioned, it is important, you know, they want to keep you on a cycle. So some pharmacies will have a little chart on a calendar on the side of your medication with a goal for you to achieve so you know what cycle you're in. So keep that in mind too. So I appreciate being here. Thank you so much. If you guys have any questions about specialty pharmacy or need assistance, please feel free to reach out to me.
Thank you guys for coming.
I want to first of all, again,
let us know how you're doing.
So much for coming out today.
Okay, you send me an email and I'll respond.
I did want to tell you that there is a cookbook, if you guys are interested. Nothing like a Southern cookbook, probably. Get all the wonderful recipes, but it definitely has great recipes in here. It's $10 that they will be supporting MDS Foundation if you guys are interested. Just see Deborah outside. I'll pass it around to take a look at the recipes if you are interested. Just don't hold on to it more than 5 minutes, and because I know that you'll be cheating and you'll write down the recipes.
Thank you.
Needed. If somebody doesn't have an answer, dig a little bit more. I'm the best
private eye nurse possible. I'm a CSI nurse because you know why? I like to dig deep, to figure out an answer. If I can't figure it out, it's going to bother me. So find a healthcare professional that's going to take care of you, that's going to dig until they get the answer. Okay? Because at the end of the day, it is all about you. And be an active participant in building hope. We are hopeful that we find a cure. But I'll be happy if we can maintain and great quality of life in the interim until we get that hope and the cure. So keep it in perspective, support each other. That's what you're here for, to read other patients and caregivers so you can learn and figure out, you know, other resources and things that can make it better. All right, I'm leaving the floor to you guys so we can, you guys can ask some questions and talk about anything that you guys want now. Who wants to go first?
I do.
All right. Go ahead. Thank you.
I have trouble sleeping. Sometimes I go to sleep right away, and then I wake up maybe in an hour or so. Or sometimes I don't go to sleep when I first go to bed. It just stays awake maybe at 2 o'clock. What should I do about it?
Okay, so sleeping is very important. If people are having trouble sleeping, you may need some kind of assistance, whether it be a simple thing like a little Benadryl, and medication-wise. Something maybe like even warm milk. All right, so that is what has an intro. So there are different medicines out there to help you, again, help you sleep. Some have a half-life. Half-life is basically how long will that medicine stay in your system for. So there's medicines that will stay in your system for a longer time, so you sleep right through. You can try it. It's a hard kind of a adjustment to your body sometimes, and you take a little tuning up. Ambien is different than Lunesta. Lunesta, these are sleeping agents that I'm talking about. Lunesta is different than Restoril. Restoril is different than Remeron. Why? The half-life is different. Each one stays in your body for a longer period of time, depending on what's happening. And it also depends on your kidney function. It depends on your heart function. So, some drugs stay in your body for a longer time. Some may evacuate from your body at a faster pace. So it's variable. I think the discussion for you, Joy, will be to talk with your internist in figuring out and playing, and maybe a trial and error. Medicine is an art. It's not defined. It's not defined. It's an art. It's work and play sometimes, figuring it out. So you may have to try a few doses of different medicines. For anybody that is, I have to be very careful in the way I phrase it because I'm getting older. Elderly or older, whichever way you want to take it. You want to start off at low dose and then work up. You don't want to start off at high dose. So I think the discussion will be talking with your physician or a nurse practitioner or PA and saying, I'm not sleeping too long, I'm waking up and I can't wait to go back to sleep. Or I'm staying up for 2 and I can't go back to sleep. So help me how to manage it. You know, maybe some foods that maybe you're eating are to say what it is that you need to learn more about. Talking with your physician about what is exactly happening and trying out maybe a few different drugs to see which one will work.
So,
yes.
And I, you know, I don't want anything to conflict with Maggie, so I guess she would have all my medications, and she would know what to do.
Correct. So that's another key point that I mentioned earlier. Keep in communication with your physician about saying you're on a chemotherapy. Revlimid is a chemotherapy. Okay. We need to let them know if there is a side effect. And let them know that you're seeing the internist. Internist may not know that you're taking a chemotherapy. She or he may just be focused on you and say, well, she's on choice on a blood pressure medicine, a thyroid medicine, and a multivitamin. That's what she's only thinking. Well, luckily, Revlimid is a good drug that it won't interact. No. So again, you may have to, again, still communicate and let him or her know that you can take Revlimid. What is the best time to take it, if there is any. Some people like to take it in the morning. Some people like to take it at nighttime. So again, it's variable. But I think the discussion needs to happen with a little bit more, kind of figure out what works for you and playing out with some drugs.
Sleep, I think, is a big problem for all of us. How about the old standby benzodiazepines like lorazepam? You know, they have a little bit of a negative connotation because they're controlled substances, but they work very well.